Hello, everyone. Welcome back to The Evolution of a Snake. I'm Zach.
And I'm Madeline.
And this is the dreaded, the feared, the terrifying 2015 part two. This feels like birth after an extremely long and terrible labor. How do you feel about this, Madeline?
Negative. I feel very miserable about this.
We are staring down the barrel of what is probably our last like really hard episode. Although I was thinking about 2016 and I think more happened in 2016.
I think so too. What I was thinking, like when I was going over the show notes, is like, I remember thinking 2015 was a nothing year. I was like, oh, it's just like a lot of buildup to other things, but a lot of bullshit happened in 2015 too. I'm remembering how not fun it actually was to be a Swiftie in 2015.
This is where all the nonsense started happening. Like the backlash, you know, it built. It didn't come out of nowhere. And I would say that we were like, you know, planting the seeds for the inevitable cancellation, if one could even call it that, for the Taylor Swift is over party, shall we refer to it as. This was like mounting in this year. And also, as you mentioned, it wasn't fun to be a Swiftie. And you know what? Partly because of Taylor, because Taylor was being kind of insufferable. She was literally like getting too big for her britches. Yeah, and I hate
so
to say it.
She was so fucking annoying. I don't think I noticed it at the time, but this is a little bit like looking ahead. But like when I was reading some of the magazine articles, I didn't read them entirely because she was being so fucking annoying.
But yes, like, I was very like, sanctimonious.
She sounds so irritating. I don't know if it's just because of like an attitude that she had at the time where she felt like she could say kind of like anything and everyone's just going to like love her because that's how everybody was acting at the time. I mean, you know, with her blinders on, that's how she probably felt. But God, some of the shit she said, I was like, shut up. Just like pipe down.
This was the year where she started to lose her perspective and her self-awareness, which is probably like her greatest skill that she's always had as a public figure, is her ability to like assess how she's coming across. It seems like she got so like caught up in her own BS this year that
she was up her own ass.
Yeah, she was. She was drinking the Kool-Aid and forgetting that not everybody was on the Taylor Swift is the queen of the world party. I guess we can also do that thing that we used to do that I forgot that we used to do, which is describe the year in a word or a sentence. How would you describe this year, Madeline?
Foreshadowing.
I was going to say foreboding. Yes, we killed it. Our joint slay.
Our joint slay, as usual.
Oh, also, I forgot to say our Buy Me a Coffee page is now up and running again.
We're making shmoney.
We are shaking the cup. Here it comes. Here it comes. Just picture you're listening to this. We're in church and we're passing around the collections box. We need you to throw in your $5 to thank us for all of our hard work. Speaking of, we're also almost at 100,000 streams. We're like 4,000 streams away from it, which is absolutely.
I think we're going to break it.
That's crazy.
2015 part two. We're going
to
hit 100,000 streams. And when that happens,
finished. Thank you. Goodbye.
Thank you all. Hats off.
Arrivederci. It's going to be really insane. I mean, the little Taylor Swift podcast that could. We have left off in, I think, May, and now we're in June 2015. So Taylor is still posting about Bad Blood. I wish that she would let it go because it was, you know, I just feel like we heard about this until it won a Grammy. It was so in our face.
She thought that she like invented something new by having a bunch of models in a music video with guns. She was like, nobody's ever done this before.
My favorite thing is that, you know, we all know the irony. This whole video is like built off of the premise that she wants to destroy Katy Perry's career, and simultaneously she is banging on every single day about how she's the world's first feminist.
Yeah, and I think that at the time, if you actually, this was presented to her, as a matter of fact. Yes, like, how can you call yourself a feminist when you're, like, out there roasting Katy Perry on an open fucking flame every
banging
day?
The drum.
And you're pretending like it wasn't about John Mayer, but it was.
Mm-hmm. It was good morning to everyone except Katy Perry.
Literally every single day. Good morning, women, but not Katy Perry. And
morning
I think
to
that
all
this
women.
Information... But she like doubled down on it all the time.
She quadrupled down.
All the time, she doubled down. Yeah, she would just be like, well, it's not about a guy. So it's like, well, I mean.
Well, it might not be directly about a guy, but you know, that it all leads back. It all circles back.
Yep. Yeah.
To the original demon, John Mayer. But I guess, you know, our first bit of, I feel like we're just going to be roasting her this entire episode, but the first kind of bombshell, or not a bombshell, but a cringe thing that she does this year. And it, you know what? It is interesting. I will say, at the time we were going, yes, queen, slay, you're amazing. Everything you do is correct. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, we're definitely being a little hypocritical in hindsight, but you know, hindsight 2020, et cetera. But we start off with her open letter to Apple Music. And there is something extremely fishy about this to me. So in essence, Apple Music announced that they had a new streaming service to compete with Spotify, who Taylor was hot off the heels of being rejecting of. She just pulled her catalog and written an op-ed in the Wall Street Journal about how musicians deserve to be paid for their art, blah, 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 fair enough. So she writes in this open letter, which she publishes on Tumblr, by the way, like the exclusive on Tumblr.com. She says that she doesn't agree with Apple's compensation model. And she, you know, allegedly writes this, wakes up in the middle of the night from a dream and writes this letter and just posts it and goes back to sleep. But she says basically until they were doing a 3-month trial where they were giving everybody the music for free and that they weren't going to compensate the artist for that 3-month period. So she said, you will not be having my Slay World Domination 1989 unless you make some amendments. And the literal next day, Apple, a massive company with, you know, seemingly a lot of corporate bureaucracy, suddenly, immediately, they reverse their decision and decide to pay all the artists for the 3 months. And Taylor is so happy, and thus 1989 is available. There's something not right in the milk here. Madeline, what do you think about this?
You know, it's really funny because up until I read the show notes and saw you say that it was fishy, I had never thought of that before. But, you know, the thing is, like, going back to what we said before, we were up her fucking ass. And hindsight, 20-fucking-20, because I thought literally Slay Queen, never been done before, changes everything. She can manipulate the business with just a click of her laptop computer.
She taps and she clicks.
She taps and she clicks and she changes the fucking world. That's genuinely what I thought. And I don't think that I still thought Slay Queen like in the past 2 years, but I was like, that really happened. But now that I'm like thinking about it, and now that you've presented like how weird it actually was, I'm just like, I think there was probably like a lot of things going on within. Like, I think that it looked really good for Apple Music to like listen to an artist, even an artist as like on top of the world as Taylor Swift at the time, like to, oh, we listen to artists, we want to give artists, like, you know what I'm saying? Like, I think that
we're not like those other streaming platforms, we're woke.
Like, I do think that Taylor really did write the Apple Music thing, but I think that she wrote it not in the middle of the night. And I think that she definitely talked to a bunch of people about it and perhaps even talked to Apple Music about it. And they like cooked up this like narrative of like, oh yeah, like we're gonna make us look good and we're gonna make you look good at the same time, which is true. That's what I think.
Yeah, I feel like I wasn't being super clear about what I was implying there. I just said it was fishy, but that's exactly what I was implying. I don't doubt that. I don't take away from the fact that, you know, Taylor frequently does use her voice to do things that benefit other artists in pretty monumental ways like this. Obviously, that is always commendable. I just take issue sometimes with the way that she frames the things that she does. She's not always, I think, super transparent about how things come about, or she unnecessarily fabricates. You know, like, she could have just written a letter and been like, I've been thinking about this, I've been talking to my colleagues, I have like been consulting with Apple Music, and I think that this is the wrong move. But instead, it had to be like, I'm such a genius, I just like from the bottom of my heart woke up in the middle of the night and wrote this letter. It's like, can we be realistic about it? But as I said, she's like reality shifting in this year. She's like, what I say is the truth, whether or not it happened like that, you must believe the way that I present it to you. So that's kind of what made me feel a little turned off in hindsight about the Apple Music thing. But the net positive definitely like far outweighs the potential, side eye that I'm giving to the circumstances.
Yeah, that's how I feel about it too. It's like, okay, it's great, like Apple Music is gonna compensate their artists, but also Taylor, maybe, you know, I'm gonna say it, calculated.
I was thinking it, you said it.
Yep.
I mean, and again, I think we've said this multiple times. We admire this quality in her. I admire the fact that she's a shrewd businesswoman. And I kind of, we're deeply fascinated by that, like, slightly cold and conniving side of her. So it is never said in degradation. We want more. We yeah. want to know.
That's the real Slay Queen at the end of the day.
Mm-hmm. That's the snake mm-hmm. that we're talking about. That is the snake.
Exactly. Exactly.
So after this, she is going international, honey. The 1989 tour jets off to Europe and the United Kingdom for the summer. And in London, now this was a real paradigm shift. She catches up with Joe Jonas and Gigi Hadid. I forgot that they dated. So she Instagrams a picture of them with her and Karlie Kloss, her bestie, on a boat under Tower Bridge. This was a glitch in the simulation. We really, it's hard to describe to those who were not there before 1989, but Taylor was like so crazy and bitter about her exes. Like, really, she was very dogmatic about the fact that if you wronged her, you were dead to her forever and ever. So when this happened, this was like the first time she publicly like went back on her I'm going to kill an ex-boyfriend campaign. So we were shaking in our boots. And Joe Jonas, nonetheless, he was like the original sin, basically.
No, it's true. I have this image burned into my brain.
Mm-hmm. And she looks good, too.
Literally burned. Yeah, she looks good. What I remember the most is that there was sort of this like conversation around like Karlie being there, because like it was like, oh, here's Joe Jonas and Gigi Hadid in the background, and here's Calvin and Taylor in the background, and then there's Karlie like fucking serving face just like there. And it was like which was often the case with Karlie mm-hmm. being in the pictures with Calvin and Taylor.
This is the thing. It's like, I know that Kaylers are insane and that it's like likely not true, but sometimes I have to give it to them, you know, like sometimes I have to be like,
something there.
Okay. Like there is something, there's more to it than it seems. It's not what they think it is, I believe, but there's something there.
Yeah. They had like a really, I mean, they banged on about like being twinsies. And I think that like when you genuinely believe that you found your twin, like in any sort of capacity, like I think that was like a weird, like I feel like they slept in the same bed.
Yes. I don't know how I would act if I found my like twin. That. Maybe I'd be really weird with my twin too.
Yeah, maybe. Probably.
Probably. Also, I mean, the caption of the photo was like, Karlie Kloss is the best tour guide in London ever. And it's like, okay. And why?
She's been to London a couple of times. Okay. Mm-hmm.
She was like, this is Big Ben. Ever heard of it?
Yeah.
So she is in London. I attend the Hyde Park show, and I also attended the two Dublin shows where I met Taylor on night one. I thought I could tell a little story time here. I'll keep it brief, but you know, I thought this would be a good thing to share, a little scandalous moment. So I was in Hyde Park for the London show, and Andrea came up to me. And she came out to me late in the show. This was during Bad Blood, towards the latter half of the show. And we all know that if she's going to pick you for Loft 89, it happens in like the first three songs. So that's Welcome to New York, New Romantics, and Blank Space. So if you don't get picked by then, chances are slim because there aren't that many passes. And she goes, you know, she's pretty efficient with her selection job. She walks out into the crowd, she gives them away, and then she goes and minds her own business. So she found me towards the end of the show. I was in the front row, and she was like, I remember you. Where have you been? And I was like, oh, like, because I'd literally just seen her maybe a year before in Singapore and had a long conversation with her. I was like, oh, I'm here. I made a t-shirt saying I flew all the way to London, blah, 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 making up some nonsense because I was determined to get Loft. And she was like, oh, well, are you going to any of the other shows? And I said I was going to the Dublin shows. And she said, okay, I'll see you there. And I was really upset because I thought she was going to give me Loft because she stopped to talk to me. And my friend was super devastated because she wasn't going to go to the other shows. But as we all know, I am completely ruthless when it comes to meeting Taylor. So I was like, whatever, I don't care. I go to the Dublin show and I go by myself on the night one. I have a ticket on my own. I'm queuing up all day long in the rain to go and get my front row spot. And I meet these two girls in line from Sweden. They flew in from Sweden to come to the show. And we were talking. They were like minding my spot. We were helping each other out. And they said to me, if we get Loft, we're going to bring you. And I was like, oh, that's so sweet. I would totally do the same thing for you. Now, I wasn't lying, but I didn't intend on bringing them. Okay, let's just say that. But I also wasn't really expecting to get Loft.
Why?
Have you not heard this story?
No, I don't think, I don't remember you telling two nice young women from Sweden that you would take them to Loft and then telling them to go fuck themselves. I don't remember that.
Oh my God, this is my villain origin story. Okay, but so I they said they would, and I kind of just, as a like, you know when someone says like, have a nice day, and you say you too? I was like, yes, sure, as well. I will do the same. So then we're in, we get in line, the show starts. Andrea makes a beeline over to me and she's like, stay where you are. And she walks away. And I was like, oh my God, I literally, like, nobody could have moved me. A wrecking ball could have come through the room and I would not have moved. She comes back and she's like, okay, be honest with me. I remember I saw you in London. Have you met Taylor before? And I was like, you know, I had a split second where I was like, I'll tell the truth. And then immediately I was like, no, I won't. I was like, I've never met Taylor before.
I would have like, done the same exact thing.
And anyone who says that they wouldn't is a fucking little lying bitch.
Especially because you met her, I guess it was in the Red Era. It wasn't that long ago. Like when I think of the picture, I'm like, that before. Was like.
I look really different in the, I definitely grew up a lot. It was like between 16 and 18 and like a lot changes in those times. But so I said to her, I was like, I looked her dead in her eye. I was like, no, I didn't. She was like, do you swear? And I was like, yes, I swear. And then she looks at me and goes, okay, how many people are you with? And I was like, I'm by myself. And so she like gives me the pass and gives me the ticket. And the two girls are standing next to me, staring at me like, oh my God. Like they literally heard the entire conversation and they were looking at me. And
oh
I was like,
my God.
And I had to stand next to them for the rest of the concert.
Hold on.
Oh my God.
Well, here's what I don't get is that it would have been so easy to just be like, I'm with these two bitches.
No, okay, you know why? This is the true mercenary reason why. If I had gone with them, you're only allowed to take one photo per group with Taylor. So I would have had these randos in my picture with Taylor and I would have had to like share my conversation time with them.
Holy shit.
I told you I'm brutal. At this point in my life, I was on a mission. The mission was to meet Taylor and it was by any means necessary.
That is one of the craziest things I think I've ever fucking heard. That is brutal. They were just standing there staring at you, huh?
Yeah, mouth agape. Yikes. And then they tweeted me the next day. They were like, we're so happy for you. And I was like, please stop being nice to me. I'm a piece of shit.
Oh my God.
Fake. That is, you know,
they are
fake.
Going to I was heaven. Being fake. They are going to...
So I won't go into the whole shebang of what happened, but I met her and I requested that she play Holy Ground the next evening. And she did. And she kind of dedicated it to me, which was wonderful. Best day of my life, apart from the two girls whose lives I destroyed. Other than that, it was the best. And then in London, I was so confused because the special guests were in this order, Gigi Hadid and Kendall Jenner. I was like, what are they doing here? Then it was Martha Hunt and Karlie Kloss. Then it was Cara Delevingne. And then it was Serena Williams. And I was like, what is this collection of people?
It only got worse from there in terms of the
These
random
people would
people
never have
up.
A conversation. Never.
Never. They would never. I mean, Serena Williams. Mm. No, she's not talking to Gigi Hadid.
But this just shows you the power that Taylor had. She could have invited, you know, if she invited the Queen of England to come on and strut down that runway, I think she would.
I think she would have.
Barack Obama would have gotten on that stage. He loved
it.
Oh,
he would. That's exactly the kind of thing he would have been doing. Absolutely. Joe Biden would do that today. Yeah.
Well, if he could find his way onto the stage, then maybe so. Yeah, so that is my villain origin story. Madeline, are you viewing me any differently now that you've heard this story? I can't believe I never told
you. No, here's the thing is that I don't, I think that you have kept that from me for a reason. I think that maybe 4 years ago that would have shocked me and like sent me on a spiral. I would have been like, who the fuck? But now I'm just like, whatever.
Yeah, I mean, it seems we used to be very insane about all these things. And no doubt someone's going to listen to this and like chop up the clip and like try to cancel me for it. No doubt that will happen at some point. So
I wonder if the girls from Sweden ever actually did get to meet Taylor. Because I feel like that's kind of like the story. Like that's also their villain origin story, even though they're super nice. But I mean, that's my point. It's like you're in the face of such a betrayal. They displayed class, grace, and elegance. And
you know what
I
might do? I might try and track them down and see if we can get them to come on the pod.
Yeah.
See if they have anything to say. Maury show.
What kind of stuff did you guys talk about in line? Like just
Literally just like, what's your favorite song off 1989? And like, follow me on Twitter and like that kind of thing. They weren't fans. They weren't like big fans. You know the difference when you're a diehard, like, you know, the difference, you can feel it.
Oh, okay.
And I felt it, but that doesn't excuse the behavior.
The behavior was unhinged. It was cutthroat back then. It was fucking cutthroat.
It was. And I was just, I was being true to myself. I was staying true to who I am. Yep. So after this, after I caused World War III in a very minor way, in July, we have a lot going on. This is a very busy month for Taylor. So this is the beginning of the reactionary backlash to the Girl Squad phenomenon. So as she's collecting more and more seemingly disconnected friendship groups, the media starts to turn on her. And I think that this is a natural result of overexposure, but goddamn, the critique was just like, it didn't match the crime. The punishment didn't fit the crime. It was way too much for what it was. And what it was just kind of like a very clear marketing move. And how it was treated was as a human rights violation. Gia fucking Tolentino, who at the time I think was just a regular old blogger, but she is now like a prestige literary published author, writes for The New Yorker. She wrote what was probably, I would say, the most like fair think piece about the 1989 tour. So she wrote this for Jezebel, which is a website that was known for dunking on Taylor at this point. She said on her choreography, she said, she's phenomenal at posing, but she can't move her hips, which is so true. That explains Taylor's entire issue with choreography to begin with.
Yeah, no, she looks good up there, but
she can't. The girl, I mean, she clocked her. She got clocked by Gia Tolentino.
She clocked her.
And she also weirdly coins the phrase "old Taylor" and compares it to a new Taylor. Which, wow, Taylor.
Interesting.
I mean, and you know that she read that.
Oh no, 100%. No. And it she gets shit like that, like. It reminds me of Better Than Revenge. This is deep. It's possible I may be one of the few people who notice this because I'm a psychopath, but this is deep shit. For Better Than Revenge, the line, she's not a saint and she's not what you think. There was an article, an interview with Robert Pattinson, give or take 7-8 months before Better Than Revenge and Speak Now came out. He did like a movie with her, I think, and he was asked, what do you think about Camilla Bell? I almost forgot her name for a second. And he said, oh, she's a saint. She's not what she's, everybody thinks all these different things about her, but blah, blah, blah. He specifically said saint. And it's just like, there's not a doubt in my mind. She picked that up, saw it, and said, she's not a fucking saint. And then she got her pen out and said, Robert Pattinson, this one's for you. It's my funniest origin story for any Taylor song, is that Robert Pattinson indirectly is a co-writer on Better Than Revenge. So she,
you know,
does,
what? I agree with
you. Back to the point. Yeah, she does do shit like that. Like, she reads more than I think she lets on. I think that maybe now she doesn't so much anymore, but during 1989, oh yeah, she was
everything.
She was reading everything.
Yeah. Well, also because of the active like trying to shut dissenting journalists down campaign, which was a very Donald Trump of her, trying to like silence and censor people. She really was trying to do that at this time. Definitely that's something to keep in mind. I wanted to read a couple of quotes from this article because, again, Gia Tolentino is a great writer, and I thought that this was pretty fair and had some interesting analysis and gets at stuff that we say on the pod. So here I go. Between songs, towards the end of the set, Swift announced, I don't get nervous anymore. What a funny thing to remind the audience, because first, that's quite obvious. And second, why the hell would she? Swift is not only at the height of her powers, she's outshining everyone else, militantly and pointedly so, while maintaining a truly impressive set of impenetrable defenses, which range from deliberate, the slumber party supermodel just like you posse, to earnest, the avowed feminism, the open letter, to innate, the fact that she's white, blonde, bone thin, and beautiful. Most of her costumes on a curvy black woman would be viewed as aggressively the chivas. On Swift, lingerie is almost businesslike. When she came out in a white two-piece and black garter set, the golf clapping bro in the front of me briefly and respectably averted his eyes. Clocked.
Clocked. Literally clocked her
out. Completely clocked.
That speaks to such a huge like thing about like women's bodies in general, that like thin women can get away with wearing the most insane shit and it's not even seen as like that slutty or anything. Put that shit on me and we'll see. We'll fucking see.
Yeah, Taylor gets to remain, gets to like maintain her good girl thing, her respectability, which she leverages a lot. I mean, unknowingly, but it all kind of like bubbled to a head once she realized that she was hot, because when she thought that she was a loser, she was a little more humble about her natural advantages and dispositions. But when she started realizing she was hot, it stopped being cute that she was being self-deprecating. It felt dishonest.
Yeah. Exactly. And people picked up on that. And that's a huge part of the reason why they turned on her, because they viewed her as being incredibly dishonest, which, I mean, to an extent, I would argue more like curating an image. And I guess that can be dishonest sometimes. But I mean, I wouldn't call her a liar.
No, I don't think she was trying necessarily to be dishonest. She was just
trying to keep up the appearance, even though she was like changing, and she was like trying to change, but stay the same at the same. You know what I
well,
mean?
Well,
like,
that's, I'll never change, but I'll never stay the same either. Her exactly. Most inane well, quote, maybe, her stupidest quote.
And it's burned into the prefrontal cortex of my mind.
Okay. So another quote that I wanted to read from this article, this is something that we get at on the podcast. I mean, we hint at it, but we can't fully explore because we don't have enough evidence, and we don't like to accuse her of things that we don't know for sure that she's done. We like to hint and suggest, but not accuse. At one point in the show, she sang on a ledge that swings above the crowd's heads in a circle. A bright blazing spotlight shone diagonally across her, straight to the row where I was standing. We were so dazzled by our whole situation that for a full minute, we didn't realize that we had been blinded by a spotlight, searing and white hot. It seemed like Taylor Swift's natural glow. My friend put on her sunglasses. Then the spotlight moved, and her ledge moved with it. Eventually, she swung right over us. For a moment, she dropped her camera-sharp gaze and looked right at our faces. A deep, rude boredom passed over her expression, like a cloud. Then she looked back up, cunning and perfect, the dip already forgotten. That's the Swift that
interests me. A serve, and I do think that there's some, like, there's, to me, there's, like, two sort of prongs. Like, the first prong is, okay, where in the 1989 tour are we at this point? Probably pretty deep into it. And, you know, she has to stand there and act like she is fucking loving every second of it, even though she has done this show, including rehearsals, give or take 100+ times. Like, she can't just, I mean, I do think she loves performing, but,
and she could be having a bad day, she could be feeling
sick,
doing
all this shit.
I remember she said a lot of the time she said she was going on stage and feeling like she wanted to pass out because she was like not eating that much at the time. Like, you know, there's a lot more going on there.
And so I think that, like, what I sort of gather from that is that, like, she isn't.
Also, just for the record, the writer could have made that up. This could be
the gospel. We're just saying, you know, she.
An interesting observation.
It's how well, what I take away from it is how well she can put the fucking mask on. And it makes me feel like when she has like the camera on her, or she has lots of eyes on her, she behaves a certain way. And then when it's off, she can behave a different way depending on what her mood is. I'm not saying that I feel like she's like a total fabrication and everything that she says and does is just like for the purpose of the camera, but I mean a little bit.
You know, I won't get into this until the Reputation episode that we do, but like at the Secret Session, there were a couple moments where I felt the same kind of thing, you know, where I felt like she checked out for a second, or she showed on her face that she was irritated or like embarrassed or not happy to be there, or that someone had done something that like made her cringe. Just because you're with her for so long during the Secret Sessions, it's like 7 hours. Like, it's inevitable that she's going to be a human being, right? It's not just a concert where she's like, there's lights going up, going down. She's going up and off the stage. Like, that really is like, you know, a show pony. But when you're at the Secret Session, like, and there's no cameras around, right? You don't have your phones. Like, there's nothing there. Taylor really can, like, she could murder you. She could. We could do a sacrifice and nobody would fucking know about it.
No, because you'd swear all that they sign NDAs. It doesn't matter
exactly
what happens.
We sign the NDAs.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, I think definitely because that's something that I have kind of seen from her before. And also, you know, I think you can see it in general in her interviews. Like, sometimes when they're like not on, you can hear like her voice is really different when she's talking to camera or when she's talking to like a crowd. Her voice is like chirpier, higher when she's speaking. Like, when you just have a conversation with her, she like kind of pitches it low and is way more like sardonic, and like she talks faster. She's not as slow and deliberate. She doesn't do those like big labored pauses. It's different.
It kind of reminds me of like the customer service voice. When I talk to customers,
that's exactly what it is.
My voice is completely fucking different. Completely different. So I think, and I mean, in a way, she sort of is in the industry of customer service. She is literally there to entertain you to an extent. You know what I mean?
She's working the McDonald's drive through.
Exactly.
She's like, who wants a McFlurry?
She's sorry, the machine's broken. Slop.
And she has to put a smile on her face and do it. And occasionally she spits in the slop, you know?
Oh, definitely. Oh yeah. And we love it.
She spits in the slop. We love it. We love to see it. So, I mean, this was one of the, and keep in mind, everybody, this was the generous piece. Okay. This is the generous thing piece about Taylor. Here is the most, this to me, this is the most egregious one. It was by Gawker, who, you know, in general, I admire their writing and their like funniness. I just don't like it when they do it to people that I like, for example, Taylor Swift. So they wrote a piece called Taylor Swift is Not Your Friend, which is genuinely written in bad faith and just not interested in giving Taylor any credit at all, which is, you know, a recurring theme until the cancellation. It was really like tear Taylor Swift down. She's never done anything good for the world. Everything she's done is bad. So this is a selection, an insane
this
selection
quote is
from this
really
article.
Fucking mean. It's really mean. Like from the first sentence, it's mean as hell.
Beyond. It's surprising to see smart people talk about Swift with such breathlessly positive overtures, not only because, like pop stars before her and after her, her music is simple and unfussy and infused with inane platitudes, but
wrong,
also because
bitch.
There appears... Wrong, bitch. All too well 10-minute version. Try again. Also, there appears to be something more opportunistic and sinister at play.
Oh,
when Taylor Swift, when Taylor Swift does the mega pop stardom act, she does it to the hilt. Swift has to be the person with the prettiest friends, the biggest records, the most popular and successful and grown-worthily obvious boyfriend. Sidebar, Calvin Harris is not a grown-worthily obvious boyfriend.
That's
Everybody
exactly
was
what
like,
I was
what
thinking.
The,
who
what
the fuck is that?
This clearly this writer is desperate because she thinks that he's on her level. She's, you know, she's living in a different realm. Anyway, it goes on. The underdog narrative that the Swift machine has built is one of forced falsehoods. Swift is not coming from behind. She's been ahead since she started. And watching her collect best friends during a moment in history when womanhood is finally beginning to feel valued does not only feel uncomfortable, it feels evil.
Evil! She this is a really, I like that you chose this quote out of all of them, because this is literally how she was spoken of. Evil, sinister,
evil.
Liar, manipulative, like, and out of all the words that she could have
opportunistic
hated, calculated is the one that she draws a line at. No, evil. That's where I draw the fucking line.
This was really, really insane. This, you know what? This was my Joker moment. I mean, I understand. We on the Evolution of a Snake podcast are more critical than most. We will critique and roast and poke fun. And you know what? Even scold when necessary. Not once have I ever felt like she has been evil, because she's an entertainer. She's a court jester. She jumps up and down and we smile and clap. It's just not that deep. You want to call someone evil? Go for a politician. Go for somebody that like actually, you know, has some tangible negative impact in the world. Taylor Swift is a court jester. Like I said,
you are touching on something so fucking important, which is like when we're sitting around talking about, is Taylor Swift a feminist? Is Taylor Swift talking enough about this? It's like, okay, let me ask you a question. Is the president? Let's talk about that. Like, I mean, Jesus
Christ.
Or your congressman, or your fucking senator.
Yeah, or like name me four of your elected representatives. Tell me what they're saying.
I mean, I'm not, and like everybody always goes to that stupid fucking Instagram post where she begged everybody to not vote for Marsha Blackburn or whatever the fuck. It's like, well, she got a lot of people to vote. It's like, okay, and it did precisely nothing. So next, like I don't.
Exactly. So our preference, I think in general, is for Taylor actually to be apolitical. Like just shut up. Don't get involved. No. It's not your realm of expertise. You're setting yourself up to fail because people don't want you there. And this is what I mean. It's like evil. Taylor Swift doesn't say that she's a Democrat and she's evil.
She's the fucking devil.
She the lightning rod in our culture? Taylor Swift is always like tasked with or assigned with bearing the responsibility of like being something much larger than whatever it is that she actually
is.
It's
true.
At the time, she was a 25-year-old woman living her life, being a pop star. That was it.
Well, it's like even now, it's like people, she can't do anything. Like everything that she does has to be through the lens of feminism. So it's like when she did All Too Well 10 and when she re-released Red, which is, you know, from a time before she would have called herself a feminist, A, and B, completely, it's just like, it's not feminist or anti-feminist. It just is. It's her feelings. It's her thoughts. It's her experience.
She's a human being. She's flawed. She's not perfect.
Exactly. So she cried over a guy for a little bit too long. So that makes her an anti-feminist, like, inherently. Like, does it make any fucking sense? Is it because she's not like the Rosie shit. The Riveter? Yeah, I don't know.
Find something real to call her evil about. This is a stupid thing. Yeah. But this was just a taste. This is just a little sliver of what we were dealing with on a day-to-day basis.
And it was like constant. So
it was like people were gaslighting us into believing that Taylor Swift was like Putin level of like Maleficent. Well, it was ridiculous.
The title of the piece itself, like, Taylor Swift is not your friend. It's like sort of condescending in a way, because obviously she's not really our friend, but it's like it was during 1989, like with the secret sessions, with like the presents she was sending people, she was kind of curating this like
parasocial behavior. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. But it's like a lot of other people do that. And it's like,
made people feel good. Why not? Literally, it's not evil. That's for sure. It's not evil.
Call it evil or like we're stupid.
It's just so crazy. Yeah, it's crazy to call it evil. Insane. Like that's just such a reach beyond. And I think that this is my issue with most of the like criticism that was coming out from this time, is that it all felt very unfair. Like it was really doing the low blows, and it was not just like Taylor Swift is doing it wrong, but also anyone who likes her is a fucking idiot. And here's why. Like if you support Taylor Swift, it says something about you. At that time, people would literally judge you for being a Taylor Swift fan. They would be like, oh, you're this kind of person.
Well, it's like interesting also to like that she was sort of the person who was being put like on the chopping block for feminism. And I guess you could argue like, well, she was acting like she was the number one feminist.
Yeah,
ever,
in a certain way, she laid it up for herself as most of it. I mean, but it's a lot of the backlash she courts, but it always goes too far. That's the problem.
Right, exactly. It's like, you're writing your fucking think pieces. I mean, it just reminds me that like, you've never seen a man be spoken of with this much vitriol in the media. Like kind of like the same thing with Amber Heard. It's like you don't see that kind of shit.
Well, I mean, looking even at a male musician, when have you ever had a writer write an entire piece about a single look that they may or may not have given when the light was off of them during the middle of a show? That's crazy.
Never.
It sounds crazy when you paint it like that.
Yeah, it's like imagine somebody writing that about Harry Styles. Like it's unfathomable because he's seen
like Harry Styles like, looks bored on stage. Everyone would be like, okay, like, and
yeah, that's exactly. Right. Or exactly. And it's like, well, he's working really hard, isn't he? And it's like,
Taylor's fake. Taylor's fake. This seems to be the one charge that she literally cannot escape. Fake. She gets it
all the time. Fake.
That's where all the criticism stems from. The surprise face, the Kanye stuff, the calculated stuff, the girl boss things. I mean, it all comes from a perceived inauthenticity.
Yeah, and it's really unfair. I mean, I know we've kind of talked, like we talk about it all the time, like she's not that way that she presents herself all the time, but it's like, who is? That's what I don't get.
Exactly.
You know what
I mean?
She's a multifaceted
human being, and is she not allowed to be a person? I think that's the hardest thing for her, and that's why she tends to like self-mythologize and create these huge like mountains in her brain, because it feels as though like people project so much onto Taylor, specifically Taylor. I know it happens to women a lot, but there's something about Taylor specifically that where she gets a lot of people projecting their own personal shit or things they don't like about the world onto whatever she's doing at any given time.
Right. Exactly. I think it's, I don't know. I'm not going to go because I could go on and on and on. So let's just,
we should get back to the year.
Yeah. Let's get back to the year.
So then we get Taylor's third star-studded 4th of July bash hosted in her completely cursed Rhode Island home. Many, many Instagram are posted. I think she did 8 grid posts from the weekend. That's absolutely insane. We're lucky if we get 8 grid posts in a year now. We're not getting fed the way that we did before.
I vividly remember like the 4th of July coming up that year and being like, oh my God,
she was living for the gram and everybody was eating it up. Everybody was refreshing. Not Taylor Swift fans, all her haters, all these Gawker writers were refreshing, being like, what's going to happen next? Is there an inflatable swan in the pool? What's going on?
You can't find this video anymore, but I remember this was from this 4th of July. I know it. They had matching onesies. Everybody that came matching stars and stripes onesies. And there's a
They were playing a game, right?
Yes, they were playing a game, and Nick Jonas was in the middle. Everyone's clapping, dance, dance, dance. And Nick Jonas is doing the most embarrassing little jig you have ever seen. But you can tell that he thinks he's fucking serving. I cannot find this video to save my life.
Send
but
it
I know
to us if you find it, please. Last time we said, someone found it for us.
I would give
you
anything
to see it again, Madeline?
I literally do. I want to see it again. So
if everyone could have start combing the web for comb the web for Nick Jonas jigging in Taylor Swift's house, please.
In his fucking 4th of July onesie.
In his onesie. So yeah, I mean, all the usual suspects are present. All the girl squad members, more or less. Calvin Harris, disgusting. Kind of weird in hindsight to see how unabashedly patriotic she was. And just how normal and accepted it was to do that. I guess it just kind of shows what a different context we were living through at that time than we are now. Back to the pictures that we received from this event. Calvin Harris, it struck me, is a complete butterface. There's that photo of her clinging onto his back like a koala, his leathered, ugly skin. And she captions it, "Friendly relations between Scotland and America." Disgusting, disgusting, disgusting.
It's horrible.
And he is ugly as fuck. Like, he has the ugliest little rat face. That's why whenever she posted a picture of him, it was like his behind or like his profile. Notice she never did a straight on shot. To this day, it fucking baffles me. I don't get it. I really, really don't get that relationship at all. And we'll never hear any fucking thing about it. That's the worst.
Listen, I'm waiting for a damn goddamn Reputation B-sides because I bet there's nuggets in there, baby.
There's got to be, you know, if it's not a whole song, there's a line. Because Getaway Car gave us a lot of information.
Getaway Car gave us a little bit. I did something bad. I did something bad, gave us a little piece.
Mm-hmm. We know he's the worst. Yeah. We know he's the worst.
Gorgeous also gave us a little piece too.
Ooh, Gorgeous actually probably gave us the biggest piece.
Yeah, it was a giant piece, a slice.
So right after the 4th of July, she gets into some hot water on Twitter. Now this is my Joker moment. She is nominated for 9 Moon Men, okay? The VMA nominations have come out. And Nicki Minaj is tweeting up a storm. And she's making some points. She's like,
fucking points.
You're video of the year. The only nominees that get put into this category are slim white women. And you know what? If you said that now, everyone would be like, yes, of course, speak on it, queen. It wouldn't even need to be said now because, you know, it's obviously true. And it seems that this was before the award shows had like wokeified themselves to like get themselves back into the good graces of the younger audience. So this was a hellish nightmare. So Nicki Minaj tweets, "If your video celebrates women with very slim bodies, you will be nominated for video of the year." She doesn't tag anyone. Okay. She's not directing it at anyone in particular.
Lot of people nominated. It wasn't just Taylor.
It was Miley Cyrus. I'm pretty sure Katy Perry was up. Like, it was multiple people. Okay. But some of us had a bit of a Messiah God complex going on. And Taylor thought, you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to try and roast and scold Nicki Minaj.
You want to know the number one person you don't come out the side of your fucking neck at? Nicki fucking Minaj. I would sooner go after the devil himself than I would try and shade Nicki Minaj on a public fucking platform.
You're going to lose. She's not the one. Especially Taylor. Taylor doesn't have the scruples to compete with that. She doesn't. And Nicki went so, so light on her. So we'll break it down first. So Nicki tweets that and Taylor comes out of fucking nowhere and @ her, @ Nicki Minaj. "I've done nothing." I can't even look at it.
I've done nothing
but love and support you. It's unlike you to pit women against each other. Maybe one of the men took your slot. It's so out of pocket. That would be first of
it's
all. Second of all,
unnecessary.
It is the worst fucking comeback I have ever read in my life. She thought she was doing something, and it is the opposite of a serve. It's like when Katy Perry put out "Swish Swish," like complete miss.
And it's like it reeks of this like victim complex. I've done nothing but love and support you, bitch.
It's unlike it's like you to pit
see this
women.
Conversation happening in like a bar bathroom. with like two girls crying. It's like, what is going on? And
she made it, worse. She literally made it worse. So she didn't, she kind of knew she fucked up. So Nicki Minaj writes back, and you know what? God bless Nicki Minaj. She went, I said, very, very light on Taylor. She could have, you know, if anybody could have brought Taylor's career down at any moment, Nicki had a chance. There was a shot open here, and she didn't take it. Yeah. And Taylor should literally count her lucky stars that it didn't happen. So Nicki responds saying, "Huh? You must not be reading my tweets. Didn't say a word about you. I love you just as much, but you should speak on this." Period. At Taylor Swift, and what did she do? She Taylor instead
she,
of you know
you can like imagine second, the room. She's like, oh, shaking, her phone in her hand shaking. If I win, please is like, come up.
Tree Payne is administering like an intravenous ketamine treatment to her to get her to like calm down. She's like hyperventilating.
Like in Pulp Fiction when she has to do like the fucking. She's like fucking Uma Thurman overdoses and he has to give her like the heart thing with like in his heart and like jumpstart her back to life. That's literally what Tree Payne had to do.
And she's like seizing, and as she's seizing, she's like muttering the words to super bass. Like she really does not. That's one of the voices of the system. She's no idea what's going on. She's like complete. She's hemorrhaging at this point. So yeah, she takes a break. She picks her brain up off the floor and decides to write back at Nicki Minaj. If I win, please come up with me. You're invited to any stage I'm ever on. This is the most bimbotic, self-involved that she has ever been. Bimbotic. Nicki Minaj says, I wasn't talking about you. And she says, if I win, you can come and share the spotlight with me when I get my award for being the best person in the world.
It reeked of ignorance. Beyond. It reeked of I was drinking too much wine when I sent this. It reeked of embarrassing. She was humiliated.
What's that? How's that group? Is that group chat still going? Huh? Mm-hmm. Yeah, I got too many yes men around me right now. Nobody's telling me to fucking take a breath before I hit tweet. And you know, so we said that Nicki Minaj missed her shot, right? But there was a shot open.
She took it
and she deserved to take it.
Swish, swish.
Katy Perry tweets. She goes, she gets on Twitter, swish, swish, fish. She says, and you
it
know what?
It was a fucking slay. I mean, it's incomprehensible the way that she tweeted it, but.
She says, it's
so bad.
The way that she tweeted it, but that's kind of part of the magic. It's very Dr. Roberta Balbi of her, actually. Katy Perry says, finding it ironic to parade the pit women against other women argument about as one unmeasurably like, capitalizes on the takedown of a woman.
You didn't put this in the show notes, but do you remember when Camilla Bell logged on? She quote tweeted Katy Perry.
She dropped it too. The both of them were like, we got her.
Couldn't
now.
Agree
we got her
more. Dot dot dot. It's like, oh, it's over. Like I was literally.
And you know what? They both had grounds to say
she deserved
that. She deserved it. She
I remember when this happened. I was still working at my first barista job in a box that was the slowest place I've in the hut. It was the like on the brink of bankruptcy. Nobody ever came there, and I was just sitting there flipping out. Like I literally was like, "It's over." Pack it up, like we're done. It's finished. Like you can't.
It's finished. Pack it up. Literally, goodbye. Logging off.
As far up
there's
her
no
ass
coming back
as like
from
a
that.
Lot of us were. I don't think there
no,
was
we were
anybody.
All like, oh my god.
It was like, oh my god, she didn't. No.
Oh no.
She could have just sat there and ate her food.
She could have sat there and ate her food. But what I remember, what we would do at this moment in her career is we would say nothing. We wouldn't say anything. This stuff would happen and we would like pretend that it wasn't happening. We'd like talk about other stuff. We wouldn't condemn her, but we would not defend.
No, silence, dead silence. I'm not supporting you. Like, we're not going to be in your fucking mentions. I mean, there probably were like some lesser factions of the Swiftie fandom. Like, Taylor's right. But it's like, right about what? Right about
the people
what?
Who matter, the tastemakers.
Yeah, the tastemakers, such as ourselves. We said, cricket.
Zilch. Zero. Literally cricket. But I remember thinking internally, oh, it's over. Oh, it's over. It's happening. Goodbye.
Yeah, I thought this was the end. Goodbye. Little did I know.
Oh, little did you know. So basically, I think about a day later, Taylor gets back on Twitter and she says, I thought I was being called out. I missed the point. I misunderstood. then misspoke. I'm sorry, Nicki, at Nicki Minaj. Nicki tweets back, that means so much, Taylor. Thank you. I think Nicki Minaj's publicist got on the phone to Tree Payne and was like, that little blonde bitch is going to get into a red sparkly dress and she's going to slink down the stage or else, or else.
Missy Moo is going to eat a cracker and come on stage. I swear to God. And Tree Payne was like, okay.
Oh, okay. She was like, anything for you. Yeah. There was definitely some sort of back channel thing going on. Some people suppose that this was like fully a PR orchestrated stunt, but I can tell you that it wasn't. Taylor came out looking bad.
It stank too much of some bullshit that Taylor would really say and do. <That's>, it was like, and yeah, in the other problem. Thing, the other thing is that like what's always bothered me about the entire interaction, and it's like, of course this would never happen because I don't think at this point in time she had the range, but it's like Nicki was like, you should speak on this and like talk. I mean, what was the unsaid was like, Miss Feminist Queen.
Yeah.
Why don't you talk about
are
this?
The one who should be saying this is the problem with the categories. No. And you know, I don't think that Taylor even got it. I don't think that she got that was what Nicki was
That's
trying to
thing.
Say.
That's the thing. The most embarrassing thing is that I don't believe that she genuinely understood what Nicki was saying in any capacity, because she, at this time, white feminism was God. Like, and Taylor was
intersectional feminism
ringleader.
Was only just kind of like entering the public consciousness. Yep. And it certainly had not made its way to Taylor Swift. Certainly not.
No, she had no fucking idea what she was tangling with. All she could do was apologize and grovel. That's it.
Literally beg and plead.
Yeah.
For me, the worst part was when she said, you're invited to any stage that I'm ever on if I win.
It's
so
bad.
Fucking
bad,
condescending.
Bad.
Beyond condescending, as if like it was she was a shoo-in to win, which she was, to be honest. But even so, Taylor, you know, Taylor's known for being like quite humble and having humility and not being like not being overly obnoxious about her success. And this is what I mean. This period of time was very unsavory. She was being very myopic. It was all about her and her life and her perspective and everybody else.
Her friends.
Exactly. And if they weren't directly complimenting her all the time, they were against her and pitting women against other women. Like, what the fuck?
There's a special place in hell for women who don't help other women.
It's yep. So funny when she lets it slip like that, or when she thinks she's doing something. Like, she really thought that she was dunking on you so hard.
And again, I have to say, you don't dunk on Nicki Minaj.
You can't.
As Taylor Swift.
You can't.
Like, when you're Cardi B, sure.
She literally can't be called calculated without crying her eyes out. What is she going to do
exactly.
If Nicki really came for her? If Nicki really came for her, Taylor would perish. She'd pass away.
She would fucking perish. Oh, shit.
She burst into flames.
In hindsight, I remember this being the end of the world, but this is so fucking funny. Like, this is one of the funniest things that's ever happened.
Oh, it is. This is Taylor literally was being the court jester at this point. Like, everything was public entertainment. It was so
good. She just existed to make us laugh and get our popcorn popping in the microwave. That's it. Mm-hmm.
Although this did stress me out at the time, I will say.
I was crying. I was broken. I was absolutely broken.
Taylor, you, all of us together, we were on a group text being like, what the fuck?
Yeah.
So then after this exchange, Katy Perry plays the Super Bowl. The left shark thing goes viral. She has like a stray shark dancer that like, I don't know, forgets the moves or something. And then during Bad Blood in Boston that very weekend, one of her dancers wears a shark mask on stage and she just thinks that it's the funniest thing in the entire world. Coincidence? I don't know, but their feud is certainly like not slowing down at this point. She's taking pot shots. And I can see Taylor not being happy for I can see Taylor not being happy for Katy doing the Super Bowl. I can see her really not being pleased about that.
Yeah. It's kind of like, to be honest with you, like, I'm going to come out of left field or something. Like, that was so like pathetic. Like, the every good thing that happens to Katy, I have to like shit on. And like, I mean, she did like literally tank an entire album cycle for Katy. I mean, I'm not saying, kind of I am saying, it's kind of directly related. I mean, the album was shit, but it's like, it almost like she was like her ghost, her fucking poltergeist was in the studio, like
Taylor
infecting,
put
like
voodoo
a curse
on the Tay Voodoo. The Tay Voodoo
it was a curse.
So strong When she applies it, she can literally destroy people's lives. It's not a joke. It doesn't always work, but when it works, oh my God.
When, oh my, it's literally like you are over.
Oh, Katie was over. Yeah, she was over. And you know what? She's never really recovered. Like, she's never had a teenage dream. Never. No, and not
what
once.
I mean, that's like, to me, it's like a once in a lifetime sort of album. Like, Teenage Dream is kind of like Katie's 1989. But I mean,
but Taylor went on to bigger heights post that.
Yeah. I mean, Katie I don't want to crippled by
the voodoo, the Tay voodoo.
She's literally never been able to get out of hospice.
She's been on death row ever since she heard the beat for Swish Swish and it ended.
Yeah. Oh God, that was so bad. So bad.
So then we get into August, another jam-packed month. I really don't know how she was surviving this year, to be honest. She must have just been on autopilot. But we start with a Vanity Fair cover, and this is shot by Mario Testino. I like this shoot a lot. It's very old Hollywood glamour, and it's got kind of like Speak Now Taylor vibes. We haven't seen her forehead in years at this point. The bangs are brushed out. She's got some extensions in. I love to see it. It's kind of hoochie. What do you think about it?
I think it serves Phantom of the Opera in a good way.
Oh, it does.
Phantom of the Opera. It does. I think it's good. Like
it's gothic.
I like sort of like darker stuff. I like it when she goes a little bit darker because I think it's like such an interesting, like, because she's always, especially during this time, it's like, so it's like when she goes dark, I find it really interesting and it's like a totally different side. So I like it.
Yeah. I mean, you know, as a rep stand, that kind of checks out. Makes sense.
It checks.
So in the article, she is doing Girl Squad PR. Like, the whole purpose of this interview is to talk about the fact that she has friends. Like, she just wants everyone to know that she has so many friends, like 20 to 25 friends. She wants them to know, all girls, of course, because sisterhood is like nothing else. She says they're all in a group text talking constantly. And it's like, okay, sure. You know that the rest of them are all literally being held at gunpoint. Typing. Imagine while Taylor is furiously getting tree pain to like communicate her every passing thought, and everyone's going, yes, Taylor, yes, and they're like crying,
at any given
tears
point,
streaming down their face.
You can just like get a text message from like Gigi Hadid and it's like, shut up. Like,
yeah, leave me alone.
Been happening like a little bit, like, shut up, Gigi. Jesus.
Or like you're on the Taylor Swift group chat, you're waiting for your marching orders to come from the blonde bitch herself, and you get a text from Soraya. You're like, what the?
To this day, I've completely forgotten what she did, what she does, who she is. Like, I don't. I hate to say it,
but was she the token minority member of the Girl Squad? I mean.
Well, don't forget about Zendaya.
Yeah, Zendaya very quickly walked that back.
Oh, she dropped.
She was like, never mind. Dropped. Thanks.
She was like,
no,
I was never here.
Yep. She was like, you never saw me. You never heard me.
And it's funny because now she's like super, super famous. Way more famous than she was during Girl Squad, and it's like, where
way
is
more.
The sisterhood? I think Zendaya is like, I dodged a fucking bullet.
Is that group chat still going? Huh? Is Carly Claus like, still sending daily updates in it? I don't think so.
I don't think so. Sisterhood.
So the good girl thing is still going. I can't believe it. Like, we're how many, like 18 episodes into the evolution of a snake, and we're still approaching the good girl thing. It's tempered, but you know, it's still there. She still has to like somehow subtly just a little bit put other people down to uplift herself. She gets multiple friends to give quotes to this article about how their Girl Squad hangs are low key and not nights out on the town. She's not being crazy like Britney or a mess like Lindsay. So here's a couple quotes from that. During lunch, as Swift and I eat salads, someone points out that Swift has a piece of food on her chin, and she announces, I can never tell when I have food on my face or when someone's high. That's why I can't go to Coachella or Glastonbury.
A year and a half later, she was at Coachella.
She's calling it after her new hairstyle. And then she's headlining Glastonbury two years later. So does she know what a high person looks like? Has she been doing drugs? I don't know.
I think she has been.
Who can say? So when I and then there are some more quotes that I would like to point out here that just show the gravity of the reality shifting. When I ask her if there's ever friction between members of her diverse clique, that's a choice to paint the clique as diverse.
That's a choice to make.
Swift shakes her head vigorously. That doesn't happen. We even have girls in our group who have dated the same people. It's almost like the sisterhood has such a higher place on the list of priorities. It's so much more important than some guy that it didn't work out with. When you got this group of girls who need each other as much as we need each other in this climate, when it's so hard for women to be understood and portrayed the right way in the media, now more than ever, we need to be good and kind to each other and not judge each other. And just because you have the same taste in men, we don't hold that against each other.
What a fucking dumb thing to say. She's gaslighting herself. She's gaslighting Katy Perry too. She's literally.
It's insane to me that she had the balls to say this when she was in the middle of trying to destroy Katy Perry's career for dating John Mayer. I can't believe that she did this. It's so blatant in hindsight.
One thing that I will say about the Katy and Taylor thing is that I do think that she pivoted so hard away from that we dated the same guy, so that's why I hate her thing, that it was like so clear that that's what it was. But the other thing is, like, I mean, John was like kind of an abuser. It's like there's
when we're talking about punishments that don't fit the crime, this is one of
right.
those.
Right. It's
things.
Like, that's not, I mean, I do think that Katy wasn't like totally innocent in doing that, but it's like, I mean, that man is obviously incredibly manipulative. And it's like, Taylor should know that.
Better
and she should be well
else.
Aware. It's almost like she was punishing Katy for not quote unquote heeding her warning or like not listening to
that's
her.
That's exactly
more
what
than
she
it
was
was.
Doing.
Exactly. It's kind of dark. It's a little bit dark.
It is dark, and it's just, it's very rich to me that,
it's
just
really
not
like
realistic. That's how you know instantly that this is not a real friendship group because
you guys never
saying
argue.
That you never argue, you never have
you
conflict.
Guys never like talk about where you're going to go get your fucking caviar plate.
Also, I'm sorry, when two of your friends date the same boy, it's World War fucking III. It's Armageddon. Sorry, it is, because that's a shitty thing to do, to date your friend's ex.
It's like
a shitty thing to
do. It's the same thing among men. Like if a man dated your ex-girlfriend, you'd be pretty fucking mad as a man.
It's not nice.
Like, so
it's not a nice thing
to
me,
do. Like, quote unquote, fighting over dick, like with women, is just like, I mean, there's something to that, but it's like, also, I mean, it's kind of a shitty thing to do if we're quote unquote really close friends. Then you date my ex-boyfriend, like, go fuck yourself.
It's true. And I mean, Taylor is really at this point, she's really like her psychic wound of the empty lunch tables of her youth. Is really just like acting up so bad. And the more friends that she has, the more people she can convince to come and sit at this new proverbial table, the worse it gets. Like the more desperate she is to like signal to everybody else that she's cool and she's in charge and she's the HBIC and, you know, she has the power to like turn everybody against someone else and make someone else be the outcast. It's like, it was a very strange time. And, you know, for you, people who are really happy and content don't need to like go on a world tour about how happy and content they are. It's like every interview, she was like, my life is perfect. My life is perfect. Before it wasn't, but now it is.
I feel like something that it's like definitely something that I don't think I noticed at the time was like that's what she was trying to do, like with the girl squad. I think that in the thick of it, I just kind of felt like,
I thought it was fun to see all these celebrities together. Yeah, it was like a multiverse thing. I was like, cool.
Right. Okay. It was fun. I remember thinking the Bad Blood video was fun too at the time.
Or when she brought Avril out on tour, I was like, I love this. Like when she had musical guests, I really liked that. I love that.
That's Sisterhood. I love her. The musical guest thing is always going to be, because
it
really is
sense.
Like,
it's authentic.
Actually supporting other artists and other women. You know what I mean? Not just like taking a picture with my hot model friends. You
taking
know
them
I'm,
as
like,
a date to an award show. Like enough with that.
Enough.
But if you want to read more about like the most insufferable she's ever been is probably in this article. Like she really just, I mean, it did not.
Oh, this is the one. Well. This is the one that I think I was specifically talking about.
This is
so annoying.
So she's going on and on and on about, you know, all the bad things that have happened to her. You can also, she's foreshadowing. She says, I hope this doesn't turn into something weird where people have to poke holes in me, which is what's happened every other time something good has happened to me. You can't believe too much of your positive hype. Very, very ironic and non-self-aware that she said that. And you can't believe too much of your negative press. You live somewhere in between. For the better part of 2012 and 13, I did not go online because I didn't like what they were saying about me. And it was so overwhelmingly inaccurate that I knew there was nothing I could do to fight. When the media decides that they don't like you, there's nothing you can do that doesn't seem desperate and irritating to everyone when you try to defend yourself. So I had to go into my little emotional bunker and pretend there weren't bombs going off outside. It's so interesting that she had the awareness of this 6 months before she was unable to stop defending herself, because it always, no matter what she did, when people were mad at her, it came across as desperate and irritating. She, like, there was a very sharp downward spiral in her own self-awareness. Like, it really ran away from her when it came. I think her focus of this album cycle was so much, I want album of the year at the Grammys. I want album of the year at the Grammys. And everything was about, like, getting as much press as possible and having as much, like, positive buzz around her as possible, that when she eventually got there, I think she mentioned this in Miss Americana as well. She, like, looked around and was like, oh my God, like, what now? What the fuck do I do now? And she's so in the middle of it here that she's got her blinders on. Like, she doesn't get what's happening around her.
No, I think that's really true. And I think it's so interesting the way that people misunderstand that moment in Miss Americana as, like, being a dunk on Calvin. It's like, I don't think Calvin had anything to do with what she was saying.
Nothing. She was talking about herself. It was about,
she didn't have anybody real in her life at that moment,
except for maybe Jack Antonoff. That's why all her friends have disappeared, and she scaled down her life. Like, I think people are too fixated on, like, her partners always, when Taylor always views her relationships as, like, a framework to reflect on herself. Always. That's why her music is so good and it resonates with so many people, because she, like, uses her partners as mirrors a lot of the time. So it's hardly ever, like, a direct critique of them. There, and also, it takes two to tango. Like, she is 50% responsible for whatever dynamic she creates with another person.
Right, and nobody really thinks about that. You know, I mean, I guess that it goes back to maybe I'm the problem. But, I mean, it's like,
Maybe I'm the problem.
Yeah.
And, you know, the journalist is also picking up on this, because I think it's obvious to anyone with a brain. He says, Swift seems so well-versed in what is written about her, so aware of the tabloid obsessions and perceived feuds and tailored narratives, and at this point in her career, so in control of them. I had the sensation several times of getting to ask an author why she had taken a certain storyline in a particular direction. And this is exactly why she comes across as contrived, because you can tell she's got a tight grip on it. She wants to force you to believe or to share in her version of reality.
Yeah. And she pushes it so hard.
She'll flog you if you don't agree, like, too.
Yeah. And she'll ban your article if you don't agree too.
Yeah. So, and she, like, doesn't, she also, yeah, she doesn't like not being, like, she doesn't like being asked challenging questions. She's made that very clear, which is why she barely participates in the media anymore. It's like, if I can't have full control over what I'm saying, then I'm not interested. That is her right. Obviously, at this point, she, like, doesn't need to do that anymore. But here it was like, it was making it worse for her to be, like, her response to being called controlling was to get, like, tighten the grip even more. It was like, girl,
right? Yeah.
Maybe you just need to let something slide off your back. Like you said, you can't control everything, right? So you live somewhere in between the good and the bad. She was too, honestly, at this point, she was too in the bad. She was, like, preempting the bad. I think she could feel it. She had, like, her spidey senses were tingling.
Yeah. Well, I mean, after the Nicki Minaj thing, you'd be a fucking idiot if you thought that everybody was going to be your bestie forever.
Yeah, she got a little taste. And then she talks about Kanye. She's, like, singing his praises, saying that they're in a really good place and that he respects her now. And she says, I love Kim. She's the sweetest. She's just a really sweet, kind, warm person. Famous last words
on Miss Kimberly.
And we get more into the black and white binary. I look at the world through my view of what's right or wrong, and anything else I will not tolerate. She says, I've trusted people before in friendships or relationships, and I have felt betrayed. I judge people based on their moral code. I think someone is nothing without a moral code. I don't care if you're talented or celebrated or successful or rich or popular, if you have no moral code. If you will betray your friend, she's literally talking about Katy Perry. If you will talk badly about them behind their back, if you will try to humiliate them or talk down to them, I have no interest in having a person like that in my life. It's like, my God, she's being, not only is she being, like, very controlling, she's also being very judgmental.
Yeah. This is exactly the shit that I was talking about. Like, you have to have a moral code. It's like, shut up, bitch. So annoying. You,
who are you? Exactly. Who are you to say anything about anyone else's moral code? Who's anyone? Like, in general?
Yeah.
You know, everybody has a different perception. I don't know. Taylor, it was the combination of, like, it was becoming arrogance here. And that's just so not part of her character, which is why I think this red is so weird. Like, why this is such a weird time in hindsight, because it was just, it was so, like, off kilter. Like, her energy was just not right.
Yeah, it was ugly. And again, I don't remember thinking this way at the time, but no. In hindsight,
I was like, slay.
Yeah. Nah, it's like really annoying.
But you could tell that she was stressed about it. It doesn't seem like, again, she's in the summer of her career, the peak of her career. This is when she should have been like sitting around going, this is so fucking cool. Look at what I've achieved. But it wasn't, I don't get the sense. She seems very anxious and uptight and stressed out and controlling. She doesn't seem like she's going with the flow and enjoying the ride as it comes to her.
Not at all. She's like fucking miserable. She's in like the worst relationship ever. All her friends suck.
They're not real friends. Everybody has something to say. She knows they're not real friends, which is why she has to keep talking about how they're her besties all the time.
Yeah. Yeah.
So that article, Jesus Christ. is something else. I mean, it's no wonder she doesn't want to be interpreted by other people. She doesn't want to be perceived, and that is her right. So then we have a couple like little things coming up for the rest of summer. In Edmonton, she is singing Bad Blood, and two fans somehow hop the barricade, and two men leap at her. Like, they literally take a huge jump and try and grab her ankle, and she looks so scared. Like, she just, for a second, she like breaks and she just looks absolutely fucking terrified for her life. And that's something we mentioned, I think, quite a lot, is that like her life is also really scary. Like, this is another additional layer of stress and like anxiety that she has to think about constantly every moment of the day. This video, like, is, I've watched it so many times. It really freaks me out.
Yeah, it's really spooky.
People who do that are insane. As we know.
Yeah, I don't, like, what makes you think, even if you did touch her, like, you're
going to the pokey. What do you think's going to happen? What's your goal?
You're going to the pokey. Yeah, like, I don't, that's so freaky to me.
So weird, so bizarre. Also, note that ever since the 1989 tour, she has had the crowd at a very healthy distance from her.
I mean, good for her. And I remember it being such a big deal. I remember people talking about the stage gap. That was during 1989.
Yeah, like, that's when it first happened.
This is what happened, even with that size. Because
Red, so many people got on stage. So many people got on stage on the Red tour.
You gotta do what you gotta do.
We gotta protect the eagle. We gotta keep the eagle safe.
Yeah.
So she's on tour for the rest of the summer, and she has many, 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 many celebrity guests. I'll just name a few. Fifth Harmony, Little Mix, Avril Lavigne, Selena Gomez, Ellen DeGeneres, Fetty Wap, Julia Roberts, Alanis Morissette, Justin Timberlake, Uzo Adoba, Mary J. Blige. I think my favorite guest performances, I'll say mine and then you can say yours, Madeline. I love Little Mix, so I loved Black Magic, obviously. Selena Gomez, Serve. Taylor singing Good For You, serve, Into Another Dimension. Selena was wearing like a matching outfit to Taylor's like white crop top in black. It was so cute. It was total bestie vibes. The Uzo Adoba performance was really cute. I really like that. She's a great voice. It was really nice to hear White Horse because Taylor wasn't doing a lot of secret songs on this tour. And the Mary J. Blige performance, strangely, Taylor managed to hold her own.
Serve. That's top. Mary J. Blige.
It's unbelievable. It's unbelievable that Taylor managed to like really command the stage with Mary J. Blige next to her. I think Mary J. Blige has a very generous spirit, though. She was like, she wasn't trying to like outshine Taylor, even though she like kind of did, but Taylor like really the song that Doubt, I'm talking specifically about Doubt, that now that we're talking about all of the way how stressed she was, how anxious she was, how like empty she felt inside at this time, I mean, listen to the lyrics of Doubt, you know.
Yeah, it was very foreshadowing in a sense,
and it was a very emotive performance. And she talked right before it about how she feels bad about herself every single day. And it's kind of like, wow, even you? Even you?
Yeah. Even you, Brutus?
Even et tu, Brute. And also, we have to tell the story, the Avril Lavigne story. This is one of my favorite random events that has ever happened. So on Tumblr, Taylor, she was getting to the point now where she was just, I think, like scrolling through Tumblr asleep and like liking anything and not thinking about it. And then she would like get in trouble because she would like stuff and people would pick it up. So she liked a photo set basically being like Taylor Swift compared to other artists with their fans. And it was like photos of Taylor hugging her fans and then photos of other celebrities hating their fans, like being weird or like standing far away from them.
Oh, I remember this. Yeah.
And Avril Lavigne at the time, there was a meme, to be fair, she was standing like a room for Jesus between her and her fans. Like yeah, really,
it was like 3 feet,
a big space. And these were for paid meet and greets, mind you. Taylor's were free at least. So Avril, she's getting side by side comparing. Some Swifties go in, look at Taylor. She's so much better than Avril. Taylor likes the post. BuzzFeed picks up the post. BuzzFeed tweets it out. Avril tweets it out and says, hey, Taylor, this is really not cool. All of us love our fans, huh? And Taylor freaks out. Obviously, she's on the edge of glory at the moment here. She immediately invites Avril to come out to one of her stadium shows and perform Complicated. And before she comes on, she like completely like praises Complicated as being the best pop song of all time, blah, 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 which, you know, true. Very true. But it was very funny because she brought her out and then she very pointedly made an Instagram post that said, Taylor hearts Avril. And she put it on all her social medias, Facebook, Twitter, Tumblr, Instagram.
Right. I mean, it just kind of, for me, it's like, I think it's really funny that Avril got so offended because like clearly Taylor didn't mean to, she didn't really look at it.
Also, you know Avril's I mean? Not really like, one to get down in the mud like that.
Yeah, I mean, it must have really pissed her off. Like, I feel like maybe Avril was like a fan and she was like, what? Bitch. Yeah.
Well, also, you know, we've talked about this before. Avril's definitely inspired Taylor's music. Some of it, We Are Never Ever Getting Back Together is an Avril Lavigne song.
Right. I mean, and Taylor is totally from the time period where when Avril Lavigne came out, it was something completely new.
She was everything.
She was everything to, I mean, I don't know any girls in my age group who didn't have an Avril Lavigne phase because she was so pervasive and totally unique to what was going on at the time. Cause that was Britney, Christina. Mm-hmm.
She spoke all those to the girls in a similar way. Like she occupied a similar cultural space that Taylor did at first, you know, doing something different, appealing to a very specific demographic in a way that hadn't been done before. There are similarities. So it was cool to see her. Also, like, I love to see Taylor paying respect and homage to artists that came before her. So no matter how it came about, it was just funny. I loved it.
Yeah.
And the performance was really good.
It was really good. Yeah.
Then we get one of my favorite memes ever, which is the Please Welcome to the Stage video. That is literally, I cry my eyes out every single time I watch it. It's this girl.
It's really funny.
Who went to a Taylor Swift concert and she, you know, was picking up on the absurdity of Taylor bringing, you know, the entire human race on stage with her every evening. So she's like prancing around her hotel room with Style playing in the background and she's imitating Taylor, but she's like just making it more and more absurd. So it's like, please welcome to the stage the ashes of the victims of the women of the Salem witch trials. Please welcome to the stage the female survivors of ISIS. Good. Please welcome to the stage Gigi Hadid and the Blair Witch. I mean, the hologram of Maya Angelou. It was very creative. Very, very creative. And if Taylor had any sense of humor about herself, she would have retweeted it. She definitely saw it because it went really viral and she was being salty by not reposting it. She should have, though, because that would have been like, that would have been a really good iconic moment and would have shown that she was self-aware.
Yeah, no, she wasn't. That's the thing.
Yes, this is the problem. You can't show that you're self-aware when you're not self-aware.
Yeah, no, I think she saw that and was like, why? Because I have so many friends. It's like, okay.
Because I love women. Sorry, I didn't know that you hated women.
So excuse me.
It's like, unlike you, lady, to pit women against other women.
Yeah, there's a special place in hell for women who don't help other women.
Yeah, there was no fucking way she saw that and thought it was funny. No. She probably thought it was like a terrorist attack.
She's like, this is so mean.
Yeah, I can't believe it. All I do is I try and, you know, be the new Gloria Steinem and everybody nice hates people, me. And
this is how they fucking treat me.
It's I like, marched on Washington and nobody wants to thank me. Well, take it to Capitol Hill, Taylor, and then we'll see.
Yeah.
Then
we'll talk. Yeah.
Wait, did that happen this year or next year? It might have happened this year.
I think that happened like in between 1989 and Rep. Like sometime
there
like
was before. it was during a tense moment for Taylor. I mean, we'll get into it, but Demi Lovato basically slaying. Demi Lovato carrying her one-sided feud with Taylor on for the rest of time, for the rest of eternity.
Is it still going on now? I'm not aware.
I'm sure it is. If you pressed it, I'm sure it would be. They just haven't been asked in a while. I mean, I guess we'll just get straight into the VMAs. So we'll start with the red carpet. I really don't like this look. It's too severe
I hated
in
it.
So many ways. It's on brand, I guess. She's doing a cropped two-piece set, except this time she's wearing like capris, like
it looks
ankle
bad.
Pads.
I don't like it.
It's yeah, weird. The eye makeup is really a lot. It's a very severe cat eye makeup. It's kind of like Julia Fox eye makeup, but like obviously before Julia Fox. It's not, it doesn't suit her because like she has very distinct eyes and too much eye makeup makes her look really old and weird. Her hair is slicked back in this low pony. It looks thin and not healthy. I like the shoes, but the outfit is like, it's just ugly. Like the colors are not nice.
It's bad.
It's like a weird material. And she's a bit underdressed as well. Like this is the VMA's bitch turn up.
And she came acting like she was going to the club for a night out.
Yeah. She was like, I'm going to One Oak in LA. Like, bitch, no, you're trying to get a moon man. Okay. You're commanding the girl squad. She could have at least, you know, she could have done a cute tux, something like that. If she was going for that vibe, like orchestra, like ringleader, whatever, she should have gone like full for it instead of this like strange nothing outfit.
Yeah, it was bad. I didn't like it. And everybody
she
else
just done the leather catsuit that she wore in the Bad Blood video. That would have been a serve. And
that
the
was
red
a
wig.
Fucking serve.
She's always to put on a red wig. Always.
Yeah.
On standby. So of course, she doesn't bring her boyfriend to the VMAs. She brings the girl squad.
Why would she? She's a girl boss.
She's a girl boss. Even and girl bosses can have boyfriends, but they just don't talk about them. So she on the red carpet, they look disgusting together. It's like if you're all going to attend and take pictures together, might you consider coordinating what you're going to fucking wear? So Carly's in orange, Gigi's in yellow, Cara's wearing a muumuu. Like I don't know what is going on. It's it looks horrible. It looks terrible. I mean, they don't look like they're friends. They look like they're colleagues. Like this honestly was a business relationship. Like they were exchanging solidarity and like strength in numbers for promo because being in the girl squad honestly was a hot ticket in town at this point. Like, cause Taylor was it. Taylor was it. So if you got to be in a picture with her and get posted on her Instagram, she was the most followed person on Instagram. Like that was publicity that money couldn't buy. All you had to do is sell your soul.
And they dropped the fucking ball. How hard is it to put on? I mean, they could have even done like all neon colors, like, oh, yellow, orange, red, pink. Like that would have been cute, but no.
If they all wore little suit sets, that would have been so cute.
Oh, that would have been really cute. Although
very appropriate for what Taylor's vibe.
If they had, I think that we would be on this podcast right now, ripping it to shreds and talking about, we all gonna wear matching outfits. Fucking girl squad. So
it's
I don't
true.
Know. I think
she couldn't win
we
with us
just
at this point.
Over it, completely over it at this point. The girl squad bullshit. So anything that they did was just like shut up.
It was annoying. So, and this was when Taylor was posting hashtag squad, like all capital letters. Hashtag squad. That was it.
Yeah.
No girl in it. Just squad.
Just squad.
Squad goals and then swan goals. I mean, it was fucking never ending. It never stopped. So she's not technically supposed to perform, but she, she had to pay her debt to Nicki Minaj. So during Nicki's performance of The Night Is Still Young, which Taylor actually joins in and sings, like it sounds pretty good. She struts down the catwalk awkwardly. She looks terrified walking towards Nicki. Like she looks like she's trying so hard to keep her shit together. And she's wondering if Nicki's going to like, I don't know, nuke her on stage or something, or like do what she did to Miley, something like that.
Where was this in relation to, I feel like Miley What's Good was after this.
Yes. I think it was the VMAs after this. It might have even been the
Taylor,
same
Taylor didn't know what kind of bullet she fucking dodged.
No, she had like, no really? Clue. No. Oh, it was this VMAs. It was this VMAs. Nicki had it in her. Taylor riled her up and Miley finished
the job.
Was it
this VMAs? Oh yes, it was. My God. Now back to this bitch.
And it should have been Taylor. It should have been Taylor.
Oh,
because
Taylor was
sitting
in the audience like, oh, bullet.
Taylor
out.
Was literally like praying. She was saying a rosary and she's kneeling in the crowd like, our Father who art in heaven, hallelujah. She did not know what to do. So she saunters towards Nicki. She slinks towards her. And then this is the weirdest part. She lip syncs a chorus of Bad Blood. Like she doesn't sing. She lip syncs. She's not singing live. The mic is off. The mic is on for when she's singing Nicki's song. Then when Bad Blood comes on, she's like miming. It was so weird. But you know what? She looked amazing.
She did look really good
in that red thing. She should have worn that on the carpet.
Yeah. Oh, that would have been really cute.
And she took off her stupid eye makeup for it too.
She looked good.
Yeah.
She matched
really good there.
With Nicki. See, Nicki and Taylor coordinated. So she couldn't do that with the girl squad, period.
Period. Question mark. She wins a bunch of awards, obviously. There's, you know, there's a lot of chatter that the VMAs are awards that you can purchase. You know, they're not things that are awarded.
Well, I didn't
and also
know that.
Some of them are fan voted, and some of them are, you know, like back channel. You do this, I'll do this, you get this, you know, or my star will attend. That's how they get like a Beyonce or a Taylor to attend, is like if they're for sure. Because Taylor doesn't show up to the VMAs when she doesn't win. She doesn't show up. She knows in advance. That's why she didn't go to the Grammys this year. So she wins a bunch of awards, best female and best pop video for Blank Space, completely and entirely deserved. Then she gets video of the year and best collaboration for Bad Blood. And in her video of the year acceptance speech, she dead ass says with her whole chest, there's been a lot of discussion about this video and what it means. Started by you, first of all, by your fight with Nicki Minaj. That would be the first person that brought it up was you by accident. But I'm just happy that in 2015, we live in a world where boys can play princesses and girls can play soldiers. And what does that have to do with Bad Blood featuring Kendrick Lamar?
Trying so fucking hard to like make Bad Blood like be a rallying cry that it just wasn't. Like, no, admit it. It was just you doing something fun with a bunch of women that you barely know. Just
you
admit
wanted to
it.
Be hot and pretty with all your hot and pretty friends and Lena Dunham. Just say so.
She's always doing that too. Like, she's making something way more deep than it ever was.
Like
it
you
was
need
never
to calm
that
down.
Deep.
It doesn't need to be like this.
Making a whole video about how you want to kill Katy Perry is actually not the feminist war cry that you think it is. Like, really?
I just love how she tries to like completely pretend that the video is about something that it's not about. She's basically being like, first of all, I'm promoting gay rights because boys can play with princesses. There are no men in this video, first of all, none. And the girls are not playing soldiers. They're doing like atomic world-ending destruction to each other because somebody slept with someone else's boyfriend.
And they're doing it in their bras and panties. Let's talk about that. Like, literally.
Soldiers don't go to war in crop tops,
no.
Taylor.
No, they don't.
They don't wear heels on the battlefield.
Oh, it's rough. It's so fucking rough.
It's delusional.
But this is what
that's
feminism,
what it is. It's delusional.
Literally, in her defense, this is what mainstream feminism was at this point in time. But that doesn't make her any less of a dumb little blondie. It really doesn't.
No, it's so funny in hindsight. I mean, it was laughable that she tried to pass it off like this.
Yeah.
So this is where we get into, you know, this is where everything starts to go wrong with her and Kanye. If you're taking Taylor's timeline as the truth, which I actually would, I mean, the other end of the source is not really very reliable. He wins the Vanguard Award and Taylor gushingly introduces him. Like, she just goes over the top. She makes a joke about 2009. Ha ha, hee hee. It's very confusing. And in her 2019 Rolling Stone interview, she said that this was the point of no return in their relationship. She felt that Kanye's acceptance of her speech was not genuine, or that he said one thing to her in private about appreciating her and then degraded her in public. And he said something to the effect of, damn, they're only paying attention to me because Taylor Swift's up here, without like thanking her sincerely or making any mention of them, I don't know, mending their fence or whatever it was. He also announced his presidential run too. This perhaps to me was kind of like a sign of his general instability and not a slight towards Taylor, but she was very myopic at this time. So I can see how she would perceive it that way.
My mother, this is so random. My mother was there watching it with me. And I remember her comment was like, why isn't he just saying thank you to Taylor? Why doesn't he just say thank you?
Wow.
And I was just like, I had never, like, at the time, I was just kind of like, that's just how he is. Like, he's just kind of like a weirdo. But like, one of my favorite moments from that speech, this was actually memed quite a bit, is like, he's like talking about how he smoked a little bit of weed and it like zooms in on Kim and Taylor in the audience. And it's like a fucking office skit. Like, he's like, I just smoked a little bit of weed, and it just zooms in super tight on Kim just like blinking and Taylor being like,
I've never heard of weed in my life. Get it away from me.
Yeah. What's marijuana? I've never heard of it.
Oh my God. Yeah. So good. But I think that this dynamic, between them is very hard for an outsider to understand, because a lot of it is like how they miscommunicate things. And I imagine that celebrities have like very big teams, right? They have like people within their teams that communicate with each other and pass gossip back and forth. Like there are a lot of cooks in the kitchen. It's not just like the celebrities. I would like hazard a guess that the celebrities themselves barely ever talk directly. It's always through like other people, unless they're face to face. I think she's really straightforward, and she like might, you know, try and dodge the truth, but she doesn't lie or dramatically change her story. Kanye does both of those things a lot. He's not really like married to the truth. He's married to like the performance or the art of it or whatever. So yeah. he really rubs up against some very foundational parts of her character. And I think this is why they have so many problems, because they just don't communicate in ways that the other person receives.
No, it's very true. It's like, I couldn't think about like two more different people, two more different artists, I should say, most specifically. Yeah. Like they don't approach art in the same way at all. And there seemed to be a moment where they were trying to come together and be like, you're an artist, I'm an artist, like, why are we fighting? And they tried to connect, and it was just like rubbing magnets. You know what I mean? Like, just like,
yeah, it was never going to happen. Yeah, they tried it, to be fair. I actually think they both gave it a good try. But like, I think they just didn't come to the conclusion that they don't have to be friends. Like that didn't occur to Taylor. It didn't, like, I think she really just sought his approval so much.
Yeah, this was somebody that she looked up to, and she said a million times, even when the 2009 VMAs happened in the first place.
It hurt her.
It hurt her so bad. And she was like, this was during a time where having a lot of friends and like being like the star was,
and
like,
Kanye was the arbiter of taste at this time. This was before he was widely known to be insane. Like, he was really thought of as, and I don't mean insane like in a pejorative way, I just mean that he's like a little unpredictable and changes his tune a lot. At this time, he was still like Kanye. I mean, putting aside whatever happened with him and Taylor and who he is now, was a brilliant genius artist, like a real visionary talent.
One of the best hip hop artists like of all time.
With massive amounts of street cred, well respected in many corners of the industry, something that took Taylor a long time to accomplish.
People like Jay-Z and Beyonce, which is like huge. Huge, 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 huge. And she wanted it so badly. I think to Kim and Kanye, I don't think that they necessarily wanted it as badly. And if they did, it was for different reasons that were perhaps not
for different reasons.
Altruistic.
Taylor wanted to be, they wanted to be famous. Taylor wants to be respected for her craft. Like, I don't think she cares that much whether people like her personally. It's like, if she feels that people don't respect her art, I feel like that's a real foundational problem for her. And I understand. And like, I understand.
He was never going to respect her that way. I don't think he ever would have, because I think that, I mean, just like if you read like any of the shit that he posted after the VMAs happened, like hit, like shitting all over You Belong With Me, like maybe there's something.
He hasn't
to
really
that.
Changed his tune on her. He hasn't.
No.
He's been nicer to her, but he's never been like, I respect her so much as an artist. That was just never going to happen. They're from different worlds. I mean, musically, they really are.
Yeah. And personally too. I mean, Jesus, fuck. Mm. Yeah. So they were just never going to get along.
And if we had all accepted that sooner, we could have saved ourselves a lot of heartache in the future.
A lot of heartache.
After this debacle, Taylor's opinion on him obviously changes. I remember she described it very dramatically as like her stomach dropped and she like knew that it was a shift in that moment. Like she mentioned something like my blood ran cold or like the hairs on the back of my neck stood up. It was a big deal to her. Subsequently, he sent her flowers because he knew that she was upset. Again, I feel like whatever timeline that we have of how this all went down, we are missing so many pieces of it. And that's why we're just never going to know. We're not going to get it. And that concludes 2015 part 2. This recording session was so long that we had to split it up into another episode. So you will be getting 2015 part 3 sometime soon. It is already edited. You may know that I had a bit of a nightmare editing this, but I am very happy that it is finally with you. And if you enjoyed the work that went into this episode, please go to our buymeacoffee.com/thesnakes and, you know, leave us a little tip. See you in the next one.